A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. We are powered by the OBBM network. And man, we're streaming on our Rumble TV, YouTube, any one of your favorite streamlined platforms. Check us out, like us, give us that little tag, and help spread the mental health awareness around. Welcome, Sam. How are you?
Hey, doing great today, John. It's wow, we are coming off just a rock and roll fabulous weekend. Yes. A huge thank you to America's Defenders Foundation for the Thin Blue Line Ball, which was up in Allen. I think it was something like, I know it was over 700. I'm just going to say 700 because I'll get the particulars wrong. But it was 700 plus human beings in a hotel, and one of the most heartfelt events celebrating, memorializing men and women and canine officers, corrections, you name it. If you were in law enforcement, whether human species or canine species, you were remembered. Everything was just top notch. And we're looking forward. We're going to get them on the podcast to talk about the important work for the blue and for our veterans as well.
You know, Mike and Leilani Rumfeld, who actually put this thing together, both of them, they are just, they tweaked it to a point. And we've been to a lot of galas and balls and all these things, but I think they knocked it out of the park. I think this was the best heartfelt, like you said, and warming one, because they hit every aspect. And what I liked about it was they honored the spouses with the pinning of the spouse, and they gave out pins for the spouse. So it wasn't only about, because in the first responder world, your spouse is your partner as well. So they remembered that. And I think that's a very important part. They touch on it. And I don't see anybody else in any other gala remember the spouses the way they did. So I think they really hit every aspect of it. They did a great job. And, go on to the Thin Blue Line Ball website, or go on to America's Defenders. Sponsor a table, get a ticket. Come next year. It's going to be on April 9th. It's going to be an amazing. You will not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, you said something that was really key about spouses being partners. And they're partners in everything that we do when we serve. And so we don't, I think, always appreciate that. And certainly, John, you and I, in our career, there are times where we realize that while our spouses were there, we didn't really do or say the right things at times.
Yeah. And you froze.
The right term, but it's almost like, am I back?
You're back.
Okay, thanks. I got construction on three different homes right around me. I swear signals, and I am hardwired right now. So, I have to fix this problem. But we get to a point where it's not that we want to take them for granted, but always there. And I think an important thing to understand is we as first responders, we need to get the education, we need to get the bring up of and our stresses out while we're at our shift or on the job so that when we can come home and transition, we're being given skills that are going to translate into the home. And tonight, our guest has a work in progress, but I got to tell you, from the years that we've been doing this, John, I think the city of Irving has hit the nail on the head. And so I want to bring on our guests, Dr. Mildred Betancourt, or Dr. B, as we affectionately call her, from the city of Irving. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited
to have you on with us.
Are you frozen?
Sorry, I have my phone. It is great to have you with us tonight. And
thank you.
We've had a couple of conversations before tonight, and John and I, we have followed the progression of first responders really having nothing. You still had a command staff with the suck it up buttercup attitude, and unfortunately in some smaller departments, in some bigger departments in cities like, we're not going to go because we could do a whole podcast on that, but
right here,
exactly, like the one that John has on his head right now, that have a mentality that it's on the officer to get their stuff together. And we know from going through the training that we've gone through, for being first responders, John serving as a firefighter and a cop, we do everything as teams. You're not out there floating on your own. And so what you guys started in the police department, which is now citywide, is just phenomenal. Can you just tell everybody listening and watching about your background and how you started?
So I was a police department employee. I was overseeing a community mental health program for the city of Irving. We provided services to crime victims, primarily domestic violence and child abuse, but any type of victim of crime. And we provided that crisis counseling and long-term counseling to any resident of Irving that suffered or was a victim of a crime. I was there for about 7 years. Back in 2016, one of our officers died by suicide, and that prompted the creation of the first of our peer support program on the police side. We started with about 40 individuals from all around the department. There was a lot of excitement that finally we had something up and running for the officers. We quickly found out that when you give the officers permission, they will use it. They will reach out for help. When you provide the ideal conditions, they will feel safe enough to use the programs, the services provided. For about 2 years, we provided services both to police and fire because, as you were mentioning, it's not just police going to these calls, but most of these calls, the emergency services, fire department, they also arrive to these calls in critical incidents, and they work it as a team. They go back to each of their departments, but they are both impacted by the same scene, by the same critical incident. So the fire department requested several occasions and in several critical incidents that we had, if we would also provide debriefings services to them as well. And of course we did. They are part of our first responders, and it was a no-brainer. So for about 3 years, we were providing services to both departments, but it was the City of Irving's Police Department's peer support program. Back in 2019, the fire department decided, hey, we're not going to recreate the wheel. This is, we're benefiting from this program. You guys are providing services to our people. They're benefiting. Can we be part of your program? So in 2019, we became the City of Irving Peer Support Program. So we had now a combination of both fire and police that we were overseeing. But this was all volunteer. I had my 40-hour job. I was clinical counseling manager of the outpatient clinic. By 2019, 2020, the peer support program was now almost a full-time job as well. Both fire and police were benefiting. We were providing services, ongoing services, not just the critical incident. Our firefighters and police officers, some family members were also already benefiting from peer support. In 2020, in 2021, so backing up, one of the things that I did when we started back in 2016, I made sure that I started gathering numbers, stats. Everything that we did on a monthly basis, I put it on a spreadsheet. One-on-ones, debriefings, defusings, inoculation trainings that we offered, how many new recruits benefited, how many in-house debriefings, how many departments requested debriefings from our support. And so I gathered all that data. And for 5 years, when in 2021, the program became it was a second full-time job for us. Yeah. I had all that information to be able to present a completely comprehensive program to the City of Irving.
Now, Dr. B.
Hey, we gotta actually take our first break because I want to expand on, because I think dispatch was brought in, if I'm not mistaken, as well, right?
Yes, and jailers as well. From the beginning, they were included.
Awesome. So we're gonna talk about the expansion and the great work. We're talking with Dr. B, Dr. Mildred Betancourt from the City of Irving's Wellness Unit. We'll be right back, everybody.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. Movefreelyamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam. We have the wonderful Dr. B with us at Irving Police Department running the peer support, a really comprehensive program that many should take a look at because you're really paving the way on allowing, just for smashing the stigma, I'm just saying it right there, mm-hmm. is that you said a couple of words in the beginning of the show where, you know, the proactiveness, people are starting to come and speak to you on a daily basis, becoming a full-time gig and mm-hmm. people are starting to open up. To me, that shows that there's a trust level there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're bonding with the officers, which a lot of departments have that stigma where, oh, my God, the department's going to alienate me. You guys embrace it, which is bringing healthier officers, healthier firefighters, mm-hmm. healthier dispatchers, jailers, healthier first responders all around, which makes, you know, that has that ripple effect that, you have a good day on a job, guess what? You're going to have a good day at home when you bring it back to your family. So the whole thing benefits everybody. So I think this plan is amazing. You started talking about data. Mm-hmm. Now, you're yes. being a doctor, doing a spreadsheet, I think that's a great thing. But a lot of people don't know how or what to do with that data.
So or why it's important to collect the data.
Important. Yeah. So somebody out there is listening going, well, what data do I collect? How do I collect data? And what do I do with it once I get it? So maybe you can help.
Well, my background did favor me in that sense because as the council manager, we work with grants. And so I know the value of data. Thinking that and knowing, I guess, that there was a huge possibility of someday having to write a proposal, grant proposal for peer support. Back then, I was thinking more so for programs. I had no idea that I was going to be writing a proposal to the city of Irving to develop its own wellness unit, a standalone department. But having that data made the case. I mean, we had the numbers, we had the trend, we had the dates of everything that we provided for the past 5 or 6 years. So the data is important, obviously, to make your case, to be able to have an effective argument and say, we have a need, and this is what I have to show. We have a need. The second reason why data is important is because grants. I mean, pretty much everything in the world runs with grant funds. So we actually just received our first grant a year and a half in as a wellness unit. We were granted $186,000 from the Dallas County. And so gathering data is very, very important, especially for smaller departments that really lack budgeting for these type of programs.
That's what I would bring up on the budgeting aspect. You know, me and Sam have seen it because we do the workshops. We hear from many departments across the nation that, well, I can only send 2 officers, I can only send 3 officers because of budgetary restrictions. Some of those budgets are tapped into, some of those mental health budgets are tapped into for other expenses throughout law enforcement. Your budget cannot be touched. That wellness budget cannot be touched for anything but mental health awareness and you know, given to those officers in fire and PD, right? So that's a huge, huge benefit on that aspect.
Oh, yes. So when in 2021, we met with our city manager and expressed the need, presented the numbers, presented the stats for the past 5 years. He thought that, well, his question was, when do you want this? And so obviously my response was yesterday. This has urgency and we've been working on this for 5 years. So yeah, it was surprising. It was just surprising to see how the city of Irving embraced. They understood the urgency. They understood the importance. The city council embraced it, supported it 100%. And in 2021, October 2021, we became a brand new department under the city of Irving. So what happened? I was transferred from being a police employee under the city manager's office. So this way, there are no supervisory or administrative responsibilities on my part towards either fire or police. So this gives us that separation, healthy separation. It gives us the opportunity to provide a private space. So our office is not within any city-owned building. We're separate off-site city hall. It provides them with that safety, with that privacy. We expanded. I was mentioning before that our program started just like any other peer support program, a reactive program, providing services, debriefing, defusing whenever there was a critical incident. That's what peer support is. That's what it, I mean. However, with the creation of the wellness unit, we are focused on all three prevention phases, which is primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. And in each phase, we have a type of service to provide primary intervention, which is anything that we can do to prevent PTSD, to prevent trauma, to prevent someone developing addiction because of the not knowing how trauma works, then they resort to alcoholism, or they resort to drugs, or whatever other behavior might be, numbing that sense of anxiety and so what in the primary phase of our program, we provide a lot of psychoeducation. And our biggest and most, I think right now it's one of the trainings that I love the most, which is our inoculation training for brand new recruits and laterals. We incorporate in a series of questionnaires, and one of those questionnaires is the ACEs, the Adverse Childhood Experience. And so we want to use that as an early detection to let them know you are already bringing something to the table. You're bringing something to this profession that is placing your, and this is what I call it, your emotional immune system is already compromised because you have 2, 3, 4 ACEs that you're already bringing to the table. And use this as an early detection. And if you haven't worked through these early traumas, this is what we have to offer here at the City of Irving. So we use our inoculation training as an early detection. We provide education on trauma, obviously PTSD, the ins and outs of how stress and trauma affects long-term, short-term, long-term. We also bring the spouses in, spouses that are part of our peer support program, to speak to these new recruits as to how they can improve communication early on. And they speak about their own experience. These spouses, their officers or firefighter have been through critical incident, officer-involved shooting. So they can speak of that experience and how helpful or not back then was the department in bringing them in and providing them with information and support. We also have a block where peer members who are very open and have worked through active suicidal ideations, and they have been through very significant, meaningful experience, are back at work, and now they are being a voice on our suicide prevention team.
So wow, that's amazing. There is so much that you give to these officers and the family members. I want to touch on specifically that inoculation training from the get-go with the new kids on the block, we'll call them, and the family members when we come back. We got to take a break. Thanks for joining us, everybody, today on the podcast. We're taking a break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Mildred Betancourt from the City of Irving.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to Badge of Honor Podcast with John and Sam and Dr. Mildred. I'm going to mess up Betancourt from the Irving PD. I always mess up last names, just a thing with me, so just roll with it. But
you did fine, yes.
Sam, you were talking about the data before we left, so let's get back on that.
Yeah, so you have the inoculation training where you're explaining to the recruits, the new folks, what it's going to be like, what they're going to be exposed to. And then you talked about bringing in the spouses or the significant others. My question around that is, John and I have been I'll say brought in, you know, in the aftermath of police suicides. And, you know, people are going through their own emotions as well as going through the motions that they need, depending on the command structure. And what we have found, and what is strikingly obvious, I'm just going to say it like it is yeah, that the spouses sometimes do not feel like they can be a part of their spouses being police officers and the things that they're seeing, especially when somebody is lost. Can you touch on that a little bit of why there is this separation? Is it coming from like command and the way that they're behaving, or is it coming from something else?
I think it's just overall the culture. I think it comes more so from an overprotective motivation, not wanting them to be affected by the ugliness, by the dark side of the job. But in doing so, I think they pretty much isolate them. And the problem with that is they have no idea how to deal with what they see and experience from their first responders when they're at home. They have no clue as to what's going on. They have no clue as to what trauma is, what it looks like. All they know is that their husbands or wives are different. They're angry all the time, bitter, and they have no idea what's going on. But I think it comes from, I think it's the culture. I think it's that first responder culture that feels that they have to fix it for everyone and be there, be the, so I don't think so much that that comes from the command staff. I don't know.
You bring up a good point in the culture. We started bringing this up in our workshops. You know, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even the early 90s, it was a culture of hiding stuff that happens on the job, right? You don't want to bring in those traumatic stuffs home. You don't want to tell your spouse. You don't want to give them those visuals. But now, nowadays, and I hate to say the millennial years, you know, with the internet, with everything that's on YouTube and everything that's been brought out, you know, our spouses, all the spouses know exactly what's going on the job. So we have to teach, just like dispatchers, you know, dispatchers don't get closure, right? So they get part of the job and then they don't hear anything else. So they don't get closure. Picture a spouse being home and seeing a riot out in the street. Then you come home and you don't tell her what happened. You know, she's going to see that on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, any one of those social medias. And then you come home and you're going to hide it from her. Well, she already sees it. She knows what happened. And you're not going to fill her in the details. And that's going to divide you. That's going to cause resentment. That's going to cause a whole emotion. So we have to, like you said, we have to change the culture. And that's a little difficult. But we have to start teaching people. You don't have to bring up the gory details. You don't have to bring up the blood and guts. All you have to bring up is, hey, you know, I worked on a child that was deceased today. So I'm a little, you know, I'm going through some emotions. I went to a bad car wreck today. You don't have to bring in all the gore and the guts. You just let them know what you went through today. You had a fight. You got into a struggle. Let them know. And they go, well, thank God you're home safe. They feel that empathy, the compassion that you so
and
much
connection.
Need. That connection.
And the connection. Mm-hmm.
And it bonds you stronger. So you're 100% correct when we have to change that culture from the 70s PD to now we got to bring it back into the new millennial.
And so that's pretty much what the spouses bring to the inoculation training. You have to have a plan coming in. You have to have an understanding of how much your wife can take or your spouse can take, and just have those conversations. And you gave a perfect example. You don't have to share the gory details because then you're exposing your spouse to vicarious trauma. Right. But just let them know, I had a rough day. I had a tough day today. And I'm just going to need a little more time to unwind.
But that's not much a tough
that's
day.
That's what they bring.
You don't want to just say, I had a tough day. You want to, you have to tell
give
them.
Give them something else.
Yes.
You know,
yes, a child did. There was a shooting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a shooting, or a bad car accident.
Bring up the incident. Yeah. This way they can put they can put it together, they can put that puzzle piece into that and complete it. You know, right. I had a rough day. That could mean your boss yelled at you. You know what? You know,
or a dog bit you.
Yes.
This disgruntled citizen. Not provide them with too much details of the incident, but yes, what the incident was for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's what they bring. That's the concern they bring to these new recruits, how much information they can share, how to share it, have these expectations before you start the job. So that way there is an expectation of how I will be included, as opposed to feeling isolated and not understanding, not even knowing what's going on with my spouse.
Sure. So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What part of the wellness unit and your trainings, like what is mandatory? Because for a cop, you know, we've got the mandatory, we got to go shoot, we got to go qualify, mm-hmm. you know, we got to go do our tactical building entry stuff. And it used to be, you know, that the mental health and the brain health was like, you know, here's that and it's below the paper clips. What you guys are doing and the program creation that you made, what are the mandatory number of hours in the courses that these officers have to go through every year?
Sorry, lost my
no worries.
My earbud.
So we know the inoculation training, right?
I'm sorry?
So we know that the inoculation training, that is a mandatory training, right?
That is part of the academy. Yes, we have an 8-hour, it's included in their training. The only thing that is mandatory in addition to the inoculation training is debriefings, defusings, and individual crisis intervention after a critical incident. They are mandated to attend one of the three if they were involved in a critical incident. Our services, pretty much, yoga for first responder, voluntary. EMDR, voluntary. However, when we go in and we provide debriefing, defusing, we provide enough information for them to understand you don't have to come in and see one of us. But if you don't have an idea of where to go, who to see, we can at least provide you with a list of vetted clinicians and point you to the right direction. I think we do a pretty good job at assessing when they come in after a critical incident. We provide as much information as possible. And we started incorporating EMDR. There's a special protocol after a critical incident, very short protocol that works with the physiological symptoms that they start presenting after a critical incident. And they experience a relief right after a critical incident. So they have all this information. They're buying into the services, experiencing the relief and getting a face to the name and visiting with the wellness unit. And so it's a lot easier for them to want to come in and say, wow, I didn't know this was here. I didn't know you guys did all this. We also provide services in case management and consultation to their spouses if needed. So as far as your question, the only two services that are mandatory, the 8-hour training, the inoculation training, and CISM, so the Critical Incident Stress Management Services.
I got a two-part question.
John, two-part question right after the break. We'll be back, everybody. Right. We're talking to Dr. Milker Betancourt from the Center.
I hope I don't forget.
Their amazing wellness unit and what they do. We'll be right back, everybody.
You back already? Are we back? Hello?
She froze.
She froze?
Our
Oh, there we go.
Never saw the commercial. Never saw the commercial.
We're trying to get back. We got to pay our sponsor here. Hang on, everybody.
Hi, welcome to Heroes in Action. I'm Ray Amanat, founder and creator of this training system. I originally made it so that everyone can train for free. We have programs for kids, for women, families, and businesses. I'm an author, speaker, and educator on everything that has to do with violence and bullying prevention education. If you'd like more information about who we are and what our programs are, please go to our website at heroesinaction.us or give me a call if you have any questions at 727-314-2534. We hope to see you here to train.
Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and Dr. B with the Irving PD wellness program. So welcome back, guys. How is everybody?
Good.
We're not frozen.
I'm just going to wear a t-shirt instead of "You Are Not Alone" that says "The struggle is real," because that'll cover all bases, whether it's physical or PTSD. So, John, two-part question.
So I got a two-part question. And you mentioned critical incident, right? And in the last before the commercial break, you probably mentioned critical incident 8 times while describing this. Okay, what determines a critical incident? Because we're all individuals. Mm-hmm. So when we look at things, all right, is a critical incident a shooting? Is a critical incident a SIDS death? Is a critical incident a drowning? A car accident? What determines a critical incident?
So when we started, we used the list from the International Critical Incidents Risk Management Foundation. They have a list of what they consider the typical critical incidents that are not your typical day-to-day. So anything involving the death of a child will require an automatic call out for peer support, because anything involving a child will affect everyone. However, we have the suicide of a colleague. We have any event that has a lot of media coverage and school shootings, for example, officer-involved shooting, major accidents. But when we go down the list, the very last one that we have says any incident that overwhelms your normal coping mechanisms. And that just encompasses anything, because it could be something out of the blue, something that I have experienced or seen hundreds of times in my career. But today, yesterday, this week, I am in a place in my life where I just had a major loss, going through a divorce. I have financial issues. So this situation that I have dealt with in my job hundreds of times before is hitting me and affecting me in a way that I was not expecting. And so I am not able, my coping mechanisms are not enough to help me through this. So we leave those up to peer members, sergeants, lieutenants, to be able to gauge if how their police officers are managing, or dispatchers and detention officers. So we provide training to new supervisors as well, and we provide them with this information. And because how do I know? And so These are the symptoms. These are the behaviors that are out of character for these officers that you've known for many years. They start to isolate. They start to burn up their sick leave. They are irritable. They're angry. So we give them a list of symptoms and behaviors. We provide them with contact information so that whoever falls under that category, which is very broad because it's very individual, it depends on where that person is in their lives. It's up pretty much up to them to identify those officers.
And on my second part of the question, and thank you for explaining that. That's perfect, because everybody's coping mechanism is different. Everybody experiences different things on a daily basis. Sometimes your coping mechanisms are a lot better than others, depending on what's going on at home. So my second part of the question is, how much is too much when we talk about not so much critical incidents, but incidents in general? How much is too much? I'm working, say, 4 days, 12-hour shifts, right? And natural cause death. I go to a house, first call in the morning, I'm getting my coffee. Hey, we have a call for natural causes, a natural death. You go there, you see the family crying, everybody else, blah, 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 right? You wait for the ME to come, goes away. The next day, drinking a cup of coffee, or I'm having my lunch, another natural cause death. We go there. These are routine calls that police go to every single day, or fire department goes to every day. But the trauma of the family, the seeing the sadness, the seeing that, so that weighs on somebody after four days. So are we looking at how much is too much for that week? Airline pilots, if they have any type of emergency, they're taking out of the pilot seat and they're given decompression time. There's a lot of other employments that if you have an issue or multiple issues, even small, throughout that week, you have decompression time. Our offices aren't getting that. They're not getting that time to just sit back and breathe. They're being overwhelmed. Oh, have we looked into anything like that? I know staffing problems and everything else hinder those, but are we looking at maybe solutions to that?
Absolutely. We don't have a software, which I know there are early detection softwares out there that we have been considering. Our department is large, but not large enough that we can't, by word of mouth, know this officer was in a critical incident 2 weeks ago, and he's in a critical incident this week. So how much is too much depends on the individual as well. That's something very personal. However, two suicides in a week is too much for anyone.
Even if it happened in another state.
I don't mean a officer suicide. I mean officers going to answering. Yes. And because those are not typical calls. I mean, you would go to back to back in a week, two or three in a month. That's just abnormal for someone to be exposed to that. Baby death, SIDS death, or tragic death, abuse. However, we can make that call knowing the impact that those types of traumas will have on any normal human being. We can make that call and say, hey, I consider, and you may not be experiencing these symptoms now, but I want you to know that you can take 24 hours, a day off, a mental day off, decompress, and we'll check in on you next week in a couple of days or whatever that might be. To answer your question, in Irving, we do not have an official program or software that we can have that early detection. It's been part of the conversation since we started peer support, but I think we do a pretty good job because we do have a pretty big hefty team that is able to identify, and we have identified officers who have been in critical incidents two or three within weeks, and we have reached out. We are proactive in reaching out and finding out and wanting to know or assess how this officer is doing.
Yeah, well, the reason I bring that up.
That's a great place to start. We got to take our last break, and then we will come back and finish up this conversation. Stay tuned, everybody. Right. We will be right back.
To the Health Engineer Show, I'm Kurt Buechle, the health engineer right here on the Off-Beat.
Hi, I'm Larry Cortez.
Hi, my name is Susan Hamilton, and you're watching Off-Beat.
Hi, this is Doreen Milano. Welcome to GIT.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and Dr. B. We were discussing how much is too much, you know, and You really hit. Thank you for answering, because it was really clarified a lot of stuff. But that's something we have to look at for future reference, is how do we track how much is too much? When I was on the NYPD, and I know those guys are real busy, they're running anywhere from 15 to 20 radio runs a shift, right? Some are, you know, just regular bull crap ones, but it's not uncommon to run three or four different gun runs in a shift. Man with a gun, a robbery, whatever it is, high priority calls. So you, when you look at your stress levels through the day, right, your patterns, so you're having coffee, you're relaxed, you got a gun run, it goes up, it comes down because it was unfounded. Then you got this, it goes up, it comes down. Mm-hmm. We are putting people into, on clinical terms, an AFib or VFib, you know, with their stress levels, and we're not shocking them back out to a normal sinus rhythm at any given time, mm-hmm. right? And that, and with the coping mechanisms, financial, maybe somebody just lost somebody at home and now they see a natural cause death or whatever type of death, and that's going to trigger them. So we have to look at, when we talk about data, we have to look at something, maybe develop something that can track our officers, and we can see the patterns and maybe help them before we hear he took his own life and we didn't see the flags, we didn't see the signs. Something to help us before that ultimately happens.
So another thing that we are just came to mind is that we are reaching out to the special units, detectives, vice, child abuse units, and doing check-ins with them, being proactive in that sense, because they are more impacted sometimes than any other patrol officers, for example, because patrol officers will respond to a call and then they leave. These detectives have this case and they are exposing themselves to these photographs or the information over and over and over for months. And so we don't do regular debriefings with them because it's just not feasible, but we do regular check-ins with them. And so in a way, that is also our early detection with those units, that because of the way they're set up and because of the job that they do, they wouldn't be attending a regular debriefing after each critical incident. Another thing that we're doing is providing biofeedback, training and helping and training our first responders in self-regulate the responses of stress. And so part of our mission is to equip them so that they can minimize those ups and downs, and they can be better able to self-regulate those responses of stress on their own, understanding how their sympathetic versus autonomic nervous system works and how they can self-regulate those reactions. So we're doing that as well. Our clinicians are trained in biofeedback and neurofeedback to be able to train them in that area. And again, we are providing a lot of EMDR post-critical incident to help them as an early intervention process as much as possible from that traumatic incident so that it doesn't linger for months or years, because it's now we know that we have the interventions, we have the services. We're not a secret. We're right in the middle, in the center of the city of Irving. So smashing the stigma is our main goal. And before we leave, I just want to mention our first campaign, major campaign for this year is a suicide prevention campaign with a trauma-informed care for first responders. And so we are now introducing this trauma-informed care approach citywide, so that not just for our first responders, but also involving everyone in the city in the understanding of how prevalent trauma is and how it affects us on a day-to-day basis. And we have a series of 6 trainings this year involving HR, human resources, our risk management teams, our executive team, command staff from both fire and police, in the understanding of how trauma-informed approaches provides not only the safety, but also the understanding of how to develop better policies, better guidelines, and avoid re-traumatizing our people.
Wow, this is amazing. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's how do you smash the stigma? It's be proactive. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the department's big, but it's not that big. You've got people looking out. You're checking in. You've got patrol officers. You've got to checking in on them. You've got a staff. So for anybody listening or wondering, like, how do I get peer support started? How do I bring this to my department? My department's not as big as Irving. Guess what? It doesn't matter. It matters that you take the first step and then the next step after that, because the longevity and the wellness of your department, big or small, matters to every single person that works there. Yep. So Dr. B, this is like, woof. We could do a whole nother hour. We know we're going to see you at the, at another event, at the end of the month with our partners at Heroes on the Water. We can't wait to see you there and meet some of the first responder and police families. But I think as far as I'm concerned, John, this is like the mystery's gone. It's not it's not difficult. It's taking the time and doing the steps, not reinventing the steps. Reach out to the people that have done it before. So you can dot those I's and cross those T's in the beginning that need to be, you get your grants. Thank you for taking away the mystery.
The one thing I think you guys did that is really, really the foundation for across the nation is you built a trust level, a comfort level throughout the department. And by taking the steps that you did, by moving this away and into away from the actual departments and being a one unit, I think you guys built a comfort level within our first responders. And on a check-in, you're getting actual responses, not just so much, I'm fine. You guys are really, you built something in a step-by-step program that I think really lays the platform for other departments across the nation. I commend you guys 100% on what you guys are doing.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. This hour flew by.
Yeah.
We will definitely see you soon and be in touch. And again, folks, if you are listening to this and you need to start something in your program, in your department, or you've already started and you need some assistance, don't reinvent the wheel. I'm going to say it again. Reach out. They have a great website, City of Irving. You can find the wellness unit right there. Dr. B has her information. The staff is right there. And thank you so much.
You are welcome. I'm honored. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. Bye-bye.
Just wow. Amazing. You know, it is so refreshing to know that we've got people like Dr. B and her incredible staff that are looking out for our first responders so that we can just go out and do our jobs, knowing that we've got the safety net built in. So if this gets a little too, we just fall back. It's that trust fall, right? Let the city be the trust fall.
I think they found the answer to the equation almost. Yeah. You know, it's almost like nuclear physicists, you know, or Albert Einstein, you know, they discovered this. They discovered it. They said, this program works. Let's make it a platform. I love it. I think it is
outstanding. Absolutely. So,
one of the best.
You know, we just got off Walk the Bridge yesterday too, in all across the world. We're continuing to expand. Talk about another group of individuals that have your back, that you can put your trust in. It's as easy as going to walkthebridge.org. You can start one in your own city. If you don't have one, we're adding another one in the UK. We just got word today. But this is another form of peer support. Okay, it's first responders, it's veterans, it's family members that have lost. Come on out. We're one big giant pot of love and support, and we got your back on the bridges. I think I just made a new tagline. across the world, like I said, across the world. And if you are looking for resources, if you are looking for assistance, go to our website, badgeofhonor.com, scroll down. You'll see our partners, our resources. If you happen to be blessed with being part of the city of Irving, right there, you just saw, you got to go call up Dr. B. Don't be a stranger, because we already know that she's watching you. She's checking in on you. Yeah. So you're all good there. And, you know, we can't do this without your continued support. Thank you for all those of you that hit that subscribe button, that hit the like, that continue to push our information out. Carry the load, the flag. I have it every week. These guys are amazing partners. They are all about bringing back the true meaning of Memorial Day, honoring those that currently serve, that have served our countries, and our first responders. They allow us to bring our programming in a larger scale to more and more cities around the nation. If you want to find out how you can be involved with Carry the Load, you can join our team. Right, we are here in Dallas, but the relays are starting at the end of the month. Join it. It's 6 yep. across the U.S. Go to carrytheload.org, or better yet, just go on our website, scroll down, hit Carry the Load.
Click the button.
Yeah.
No time necessary.
Takes you right to what you need to know. And, you know, for all of our active duty personnel all over the world, thank you so much for standing up and for what is right and protecting us here at home. For our veterans, God bless you. Thank you for doing what you did, putting your lives on the line so that we can do shows like this every week and speak our mind and be free. That's what America is about. And for all of our first responders out there, we pray for you every day. Please know that we got your back. We are your family, even though we're not actively out there on the street with you. We're in the trenches with you. We're offering a hand. Whatever you need, go on our website. Our phone number is right there. Reach out, because we got you. John, take us home.
You said it all, Sam, but I want to dedicate this show to our fine officers in the Chicago area who lost a brother to suicide this past week. Reach out, guys. I'm supporting you. You have your support here in Texas. We were in Chicago not too long ago, and we want to come back and help you. So you know what? Our prayers are with you.
Absolutely. Till next week, everybody. Take care.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.